You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Spring will be here soon, so if buying a new home is on your to-do list, right now is the time to call Quicken Loans. Learn about which mortgage options make sense for you and get a jump on your competition. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for the new Sesame Ginger Glazed Chicken Signature Wrap. How would you like it?
I'll take a...
Sports announcer at home?
Yeah, how'd you...
We just know.
My wife picks up the new signature wrap. It's got double the rotisserie-style chicken mixed with a sesame ginger glaze. She appears annoyed at me, but she shrugs it off. Those sweet and savory flavors are calling her name. She lifts the wrap and... She takes the bite! Incredible! And now she's closing the door on my... Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Double meat based on average 6-inch sub.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
tip pour me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
The following program contains coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
It's time now for the Conservative Curmudgeon Radio Show. Now, here's Grouchy.
You're fine. All right. We dropping the chandeliers now.
Gotta make all up right, for the fact that I forgot to load the ship.
It is 2021. This is your first grouch of the year. So before we get rolling, it is... my job, nay, my pleasure, to inform you that at the top of the next hour, the red wine will be on. And if I understand things correctly, Diane and Jody will be together on the couch. I don't know if there's going to be anybody else with them, but I did hear that they will be together again on the couch tonight. So you got that to look forward to. do we have a Juxt or an Amish and Robinson this week?
It is a Juxt, and it will probably be a slightly extended one, because after everything that's been going on today, I don't even feel like fucking talking about politics, so I'm glad this is your hour and not mine.
Yeah, we'll see. There you go, folks. And then a slightly extended Juxt, and that will be your nightcap, apparently. But it's all good. You just get cozied in, get your drink filled, get comfortable. You're tuned into KLRN Radio, America's Podcast Network, and we're going to take care of you tonight. So, we all know what the big news story has been for the last 9 months. It's COVID. And we know that the different administrations, the current slash outgoing and the pending slash incoming, have different ideas about how to tackle everything from distribution of vaccine to, you know, tracing and tracking and whatnot. One of the things that bothers me is a story that came out of Germany. And it's not that they were the first ones to think of it, but it looks like they're the first ones to really have lawmakers putting forth the work to get it done. And what's going on over there is German lawmakers are calling for a basic, I guess you would call it a domestic vaccination passport. And we have one group that's actually trying to go another direction. Well, there's two groups, and they definitely want to go in different directions. There's one group that wants to have a law that prohibits businesses from excluding people who have not been vaccinated. And then we have a group that want to allow businesses to exclude people that have not been vaccinated, to deny them service. And this includes everything from clothing stores to grocery stores to airlines to bus lines to train lines. You name it, they want to restrict it and force you to be vaccinated. Now, the group that wants to make sure that everybody is protected says that it's unacceptable that airlines only take vaccinated people with them, or that restaurants deny access to non-vaccinated people. First of all, there shouldn't be any way for a business to know you've been vaccinated. That's none of their business. They don't know if you've been vaccinated against anything else in your life, like smallpox or chickenpox or shingles, or yeah, this is different, but they don't know if you had a flu shot, and it's not that much different than the flu. So the parties are examining legal measures to either basically prevent discrimination against unvaccinated people, or to enact discrimination against unvaccinated people. And both parties are looking at such things as amending existing legislation to make clear that the vaccination status among terms and conditions for services is either prohibited or not. It's interesting story. Really, the parties battling over this over there. The idea of a kind of what should we call it? Some kind of identification to show that you've been vaccinated has been forwarded by politicians in this country, politicians on the left, that is. I don't like the idea. Period. I don't like it for us, but yeah, there are people that are forwarding this stuff. that think that you shouldn't be allowed to partake in goods and services in this country unless you get vaccinated. And I don't see how that's constitutional. I don't see how it's, hell, even morally ethical. But there you have it. That's what they're talking about. But on Monday, the World Medical Association president Frank Ulrich Montgomery. That's a nice combination of British and German names, right? Frank Ulrich Montgomery. The head of Germany's Standing Commission on Vaccination, Thomas Mertens, both suggested that people immunized against the coronavirus could use a vaccine passport to access flights or businesses such as restaurants. Now, amid the debate, the rollout of vaccines in Europe has not been going without a hitch. One day after the EU dispatched its first doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine, Spain's health minister reported delivery delays due to difficulties controlling the temperature of the vaccine, which must be stored at minus 70 Celsius. Meanwhile, German health minister Jens Spahn said that only 11 to 13 million doses are expected to reach Germany by March. That would cover 13 to 16% of their population, compared to the 60% coverage recommended by the World Health Organization. The German government, which has opted not to make vaccination mandatory, is formally opposed to linking privileges to vaccination status, and that is the ruling party, we'll say, because their government is different than ours. But many wait in solidarity so that some can be vaccinated first, Spahn told the Funk Media Group on Monday. And those who have not yet been vaccinated expect the vaccinated to be patient in solidarity as well. Is that? I don't know. Anyway. They said nobody should claim special rights until everyone has had a chance to be vaccinated. We are fighting the pandemic together, and we will overcome it together, he said. Yes, this is the worldwide mantra that makes everybody puke by now from hearing it so much. We'll get through it together. Screw you. Earlier, Interior Minister Horst Seehofer warned that special treatment for the vaccinated would divide society. Yeah, that's very true. So Seehofer conceded that the government may not be able to stop businesses from requiring proof of vaccination, as existing laws on discrimination do not appear to cover the issue. As such, all he could do was warn against it. Volker Ulrich, legal policy spokesman for the Christian Social Union, the junior partner in the governing coalition, told the paper that, yeah, I can't even pronounce the paper's name, so I'm not even going to try. On Tuesday, that although existing law would prohibit discrimination between vaccinated and non-vaccinated people on public transport, it would not apply to the private sector. That's interesting. Sebastian Bickerich, spokesman for the Federal Anti-Discrimination Agency, confirmed that legislation would need to be updated. Some EU countries have indicated a readiness to track those who have and have not received a vaccine, although without saying whether vaccination status would carry privileges. Estonia, the country of, earlier in the year reported testing of a digital immunity passport to track those recovered from COVID-19, while Spain has said it will create a database of people who refuse to be vaccinated and share it with the rest of the EU. They said what will be done is a registry which will be shared with our European partners of those people who have been offered it and simply rejected it, Spain's health minister said on Monday, without elaborating on the purpose of such a database. Britain, now withdrawn from the EU, has formally ruled out immunity passports, but recently appointed vaccines minister Nadhim Zawahi has suggested that private businesses such as pubs could opt to deny entry to customers who have refused vaccination. But if you don't have any kind of vaccination passports, how do you know? Again, slippery slope here. You know, we come into this now that the vaccines are starting to be distributed. And I don't want to, let me slide forward here. Yeah, I don't want to tip away too much here because we've got another vaccine related story later on. But I wanted to jump us a little bit forward and back home. Because in about 2 weeks, I think it may be like right at 2 weeks. Let me look at my calendar real quick, if I can. If it will, it's not going to. Okay. Oh, there it is. Yes, 2 weeks from today is Inauguration Day. So in 2 weeks' time, we will have a new president. There will be a new agenda in this country. Like it or not, and I'm a not, they're going to control everything. They're going to have the House, the Senate, and the White House. And we've talked about this for years. This is not something new. Not where I'm concerned anyway. Because if you've been listening, you know I've been talking about it for years. They're not going to squander these first 2 years like Obama did. Obama made a huge mistake when he had the power of all three houses and didn't use it. And I promise you that the radical agenda of the left will not sit idle for 2 years like it did last time. That being said, one of the things that they really want to target is our guns, our Second Amendment right. Now, in so much as that, the ATF is not, nor has it ever been, a legislative body. It is a law enforcement agency under the executive branch. As such, it shouldn't be able to create or change laws so that those who are law-abiding citizens today might be dangerously armed criminals tomorrow. Sadly, though, that's not how it works in practice in the realm of gun control. The agency has been doing exactly that for some time now, from the Honey Badger affair to the bump stock ban to more recent decisions that previously approved 80% pistol frames from Polymer 80 are firearms after all. So if you own a specific brand of AR pistol, use your pistol brace in the wrong way, own a bump stock, or bought an 80% pistol kit from Polymer 80 without jumping through the FFL hoops, congrats. Your firearm makes you a felon. And if you fall into that last group, watch out. At least one person has reported ATF agents showing up demanding the surrender of the previously legal pistol frame. Now, where am I going with this? Well, from the office of the president-elect, Joe Biden, when Joe Biden's campaign released his plan to end our gun violence epidemic, we were told in no uncertain terms what President Biden's priorities would be should he become president. in what could be far more accurately called Biden's war on guns, so-called ghost guns are targeted specifically. Now, contrary to what Team Biden probably wants you to think, home gunsmithing is neither illegal nor some shady under-the-radar business. Americans have been building their own firearms all along, and the law has always allowed it. All that has changed are the tools and materials needed for the craft. One of the biggest fears that gun owners have, especially now, is that the right to keep and bear arms would come under renewed attack as soon as Biden moved into the White House. Well, we didn't even have to wait that long. Evidently, the ATF now answers to a different master. ATF Deputy Director Regina Lombardo revealed during a November 10th conference call that Team Biden had already reached out to her to discover the agency's top priorities. Those priorities are pistol braces and lower receivers, and now it seems the ATF is working hard to get on Biden's nice list for next Christmas. Just a month after that call, Polymer 80 Incorporated was raided by the ATF. Records of sales were obtained. At least one person has reported the ATF showing up and demanding the surrender of a pistol that had been purchased in a perfectly legal manner at that time as part of a build kit. Now, only elected legislators acting together are supposed to be able to modify laws in ways that might attach prison time and the forfeiture of civil and basic human rights to what was otherwise perfectly legal activity. Sadly, that hasn't been the case in practice when it comes to gun control for quite a while now, actually, believe it or not. The National Firearms Act of 1934 in part defined firearms in legal language. The Gun Control Act of 1968, amongst other things, updated this and required that anyone who engages in the business of building and selling firearms must obtain a federal firearms license and apply serial numbers to and pay taxes on those firearms. The law does not, however, require an individual making a gun for his or herself to do this. The ATF has been allowed the authority to define what constitutes a firearm, so long as they do so within the existing federal laws. Now, this has caused numerous problems over the years, but this most recent incident is perhaps the best example of how. The part of a completed gun or the individual part when building a gun for oneself that is legally considered a firearm and thus requires a serial number and a background check is the lower receiver for long guns and the frame for handguns. Since individuals aren't prohibited from building their own, many companies now call now sell what are called 80% receivers and 80% frames. The idea here is that the frame or receiver is almost done, but you, as the end user, must engage in some milling work to render these parts capable of being used as a firearm. None of these parts are regulated individually as firearms. However, now that they're bundled up in a kit, the ATF has decided that it somehow does constitute a firearm. This means, of course, that Polymer 80 has been selling firearms in violation of the federal law. More importantly, to the individual customer, anyone who bought this kit, according to the ATF, has done so in violation of federal law. Because of the extraordinary authority granted to the ATF, all that stands between a law-abiding citizen who owns a firearm and a potential felony conviction that would result in years in prison, a hefty fine, and the loss of the right to keep and bear arms is a single decision by someone at the ATF. And it isn't just pistol frames sold in convenient kits. Lower receivers for the AR platform that still require some work are on the rocket docket too, according to Biden's plan. As are 3D printed firearms. Essentially, the administration wants to ban home gunsmithing, and the ATF seems more than happy to pitch in. Now, has the ATF, which at this moment answers to the Trump administration, gone rogue? No. This is far from the first time anything like this has happened. There have been many examples just like this, though the one that spawned the most public outcry so far was the Honey Badger. So why would an agency answerable to a supposedly gun-friendly president, let's not forget Trump's bump stock ban in 2018, which essentially did the same thing as what the ATF is doing now. The answer is simple. The ATF was never about protecting the right to bear arms. The Second Amendment is that protection. The existence of the ATF and the NFA and the GCA, for that matter, are in direct conflict with the Second Amendment. They exist only to regulate how we the people keep and bear arms. So no, they haven't gone rogue. They're finally living up to their big brother overreaching government's initial purpose. So heads up out there. If you own a polymer 80 frame lower receiver kit, if you've built a firearm out of one, keep it low. I understand there'll be a lot of boating accidents coming up here in the next couple of weeks where firearms are concerned. So I hope you all wear your life vests and know how to swim and make it back to shore safely. So anyway, I promised you another coronavirus vaccine related story, and we've gotten to it. So I guess we'll hit it real quick. Despite having been prioritized as the first recipients of the coronavirus vaccine, a large number of healthcare and frontline workers are passing on the vaccine. Yes, you heard that right. Despite what you're seeing on your local news channels, despite all the happy glory stories you're hearing in the media, many are passing on the vaccine. Early reports from across the country show that healthcare and frontline workers are refusing to get the COVID-19 vaccine. In Ohio, 60% of nursing employees decided not to take the vaccine. Last week, Governor Mike DeWine reacted to the low participation numbers by saying, "We aren't going to make them, but we wish they had a higher compliance." He added that he was troubled by how many nursing home workers rejected the vaccine. DeWine warned frontline workers that they soon would no longer be in front of the line. Our message today is the train may not be coming back for a while. We're going to make it available to everyone eventually, but this is the opportunity for you, and you should really think about getting it. See, we're going to get into some stuff here. Dr. Joseph Varone, chief of staff at the United Memorial Medical Center in Houston, is frustrated that over half the nurses in his unit have refused to get the vaccine. He said, "Yesterday I had a friendly argument with more than 50% of my nurses in my unit telling me that they will not get the vaccine. Some of those nurses have had family members admitted to the hospital, gravely ill with COVID-19, too. But," he said, "some nurses and hospital staff members," he also had to say this part, "many of whom are Latino or Black, are skeptical it'll work and are worried about, quote unquote, unfounded side effects." Now, some of these unfounded side effects that Dr. Varone is referring to are right in his own hospital, where one nurse who took the vaccine is still in the ICU 4 days after her entire left side of her body went numb and she collapsed. She still hasn't moved her left arm and left leg. They don't know if she will again. Not saying she's not going to, but they don't know. Others complained of multiple days of fevers and pains and said that they would much rather go through having the virus. You know, these are just a couple of examples right here in the doctor, the good doctor's very own hospital. In California, an estimated 50% of frontline workers in Riverside County turned down the vaccine, according to Public Health Director Kim Saruwatari. That's a mouthful. At St. Elizabeth Community Hospital in Tehama County, fewer than half of the 700 hospital workers eligible for the vaccine were willing to take the shot when it was first offered. At Providence Holy Cross Medical Center in Mission Hills, one in five frontline nurses and doctors have received the vaccine. Only one in five. Roughly 20 to 40% of LA County's frontline workers who were offered the vaccine did the same, according to county health officials. Dr. Nikhila Javadi, the chief clinical officer at Chicago's Loretto Hospital, surveyed the hospital staff right before the vaccine was made available, and 40% of their employees said they will not take the vaccine. In an early December survey of the New York firefighters, New York Fire Department members, approximately 55% of firefighters said they would opt to not get the shot. A survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation published on December 15th found that 29% of those who work in a healthcare delivery setting probably would not or definitely would not get the shot. Now, this was back on December 15th. The poll also found that 33% of essential workers would pass. Overall, 27% of Americans are vaccine hesitant, according to that poll on December 15th. I think that we've seen that number climb. Now, look, I'm not going to tell you that everybody that has a reaction to the vaccine is going to collapse and go numb on half their body. I'm sure that is rare. It is not the first case I've heard of it. But I can say that I haven't heard more than three. I don't trust the government number. Well, I say government numbers. I don't trust the CDC numbers who said that only 27 people in the country have had severe reactions. I don't trust that number at all. If we've got two severe reactions in one hospital in Texas, I think we're going to see more than 27. Look, the fact is there's a stark divide among Americans who are willing to get vaccinated, and a lot of it depends on their political affiliation, it seems. Whether there's cause and effect here, I don't know. But according to a survey, 86% of Democrats say they will definitely or probably get the vaccine, compared to 56% of Republicans who said the same. Now, according to Kaiser Family Foundation, the top concerns about being reluctant to get the vaccine are, one, possible side effects, two, lack of trust in the government to ensure the vaccine's safety and effectiveness. I think the vaccine is as good as it's going to be. I really do. Concerns that the vaccine is too new, I would think that would fall under the previous category. But, if you're citing that your concern is that it's just too new, to me, you're a dingbat. Get off the fence and say yes or no. And then concerns over the role of politics in the development process. Now, Sheena Bumpus, those damn Bumpuses. I love that movie. Come on, got to give me that one. Christmas just passed. Anyway, Sheena Bumpus, a certified nursing assistant at a home in Oklahoma, told the New York Times that she was reluctant to get the vaccine because I don't want to be a guinea pig, she said. April Liu, a 31-year-old RN at Providence Holy Cross Medical Center in California, refused to take the vaccine because she is concerned that it might not be safe for pregnant women, and she is 6 months into her pregnancy. She said, I'm choosing the risk of contracting COVID or the risk of the unknown of the vaccine, she said. I think I'm choosing the risk of COVID between the two. I can control that and prevent it a little by wearing masks, although not 100% for sure. So there's a lot of pushback about who's getting it and, you know, the numbers that you're seeing on the news, because they're the same numbers I'm seeing on the news. They're lies. They're lies. You know, we're not running out of vaccine because we have too many healthcare workers getting it. We're actually wondering what the hell to do with some of the vaccine that's sitting there not being used now, because they're refusing to take it. These are medical professionals, people, and they're refusing to take the vaccine. I don't know about you, but it's something to think about anyway. And now we got last week, Fauci noted that the coronavirus vaccines could become mandatory in order to attend school or travel internationally. Who the fuck is he to make some kind of thing like that? He's no legislator. He needs to keep his mouth shut. All right. Quick reminder, you got 15 minutes before the red wine kicks off. Jody and Diane together again on the couch. I am sure that after today's happenings, it will be nothing short of blistering commentary on red wine tonight. So you're going to want to sit still for that. Then you get, as Rick described at the top of the hour, a extended juxtaposition with Rowdy Rick and Ordy Packard, and that would probably be it for the night. So when you tune in for Juxt, pour your drink a little extra tall, let it last through all that, and it'll be your nightcap. So anyway, we got a little more to do here, so we're going to push on. President-elect Joe Biden has selected Merrill Garland. Yes, you heard me right. I did it on purpose. A federal appeals court judge who in 2016 was snubbed by Republicans for a seat on the Supreme Court as his attorney general. In picking Garland, Biden is turning to an experienced judge who held senior positions, at the Justice Department decades ago, including as a supervisor of the prosecution of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. The pick will force Senate Republicans to contend with the nomination of someone they spurned in 2016. Half of them weren't even there in 2016. Refusing to even hold hearings when a Supreme Court vacancy arose. Now, I will say this, okay? The two issues are completely separate. Merrick Garland, as United States Attorney General, considering who the other candidates were, I'll take Garland 8 days a week. Eight freaking days a week. So Biden is expected to announce the appointment officially tomorrow, along with other senior leaders of the department, including former Homeland Security Advisor Lisa Monaco as Deputy Attorney General and former Justice Department Civil Rights Chief Vanita Gupta as Associate Attorney General. He will also name an Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Kristen Clark, the President of Lawyers Committees for Civil Rights under Law and Advocacy Group. Now, Garland was selected over other finalists for the job, Alabama Senator Doug Jones, outgoing Alabama Senator Doug Jones, and former Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates. This is why I said I will take Merrick Garland 8 days a week over either of those two idiots. So I'll give it up to Biden on this one. Of the three, he made the best pick possible. I'm surprised that he was allowed to by Kamala. I'm really shocked. But I'm glad that Biden did this. So, Biden regards Garland as an attorney general who can restore integrity to the Justice Department. It's not like it's missing any integrity. And as someone who, having served in the Justice Department under presidents of both political parties, will be respected by nonpartisan career staffers. If confirmed, Garland would confront immediate challenges, including an ongoing criminal tax investigation into Biden's son. That'll disappear rather quickly. Hunter, as well as calls from many Democrats to pursue inquiries into Trump after he leaves office. A special counsel investigation into the origins of the Russia probe also remains open, forcing a new attorney general to decide how to handle it and what to make public. Nothing will be made public because there is nothing to the Russia-Trump connection, as they like to say. They only investigated it for 2.5 years with a team of 50 or 60 people that would shame any law firm in the country, and they couldn't make any kind of, charge that would stick, anything that would be impeachable, because even what they impeached Trump over wasn't even a misdemeanor, let alone a high crime. So they just invented shit to put on there for an impeachment article. It was unclear how Garland's decision would be received by Black and Latino advocates who had advocated for a Black attorney general or for someone with a background in civil rights causes and criminal justice reform. But the selection of Gupta and Clark, two women with significant experience in civil rights, appeared designed to blunt those concerns and offered as a signal that progressive causes will be prioritized in the new administration. At the expense of a lot of other things. So, that's where it's going to be. Get ready for a woke 4 years. Hopefully we can do something about the House in two. And hopefully we can do something about, there'll be some Senate seats in 2 years too, I believe. I haven't looked into that deeply. I don't know how many, but I'd take the last 2 years of Biden's administration in gridlock beautifully. That would be fantastic because there's going to be a lot of damage done quick in this administration. Count on it. Garland would also return a Justice Department radically different than the one he left. The September 11th attacks are years away. The department's National Security Division had not yet been created, and a proliferation of aggressive cyber and counterintelligence threats from foreign adversaries have made countries like China, Russia, and North Korea top priorities for federal law enforcement. Monaco brings to the department significant national security experience, including cybersecurity, and especially urgent issue as the United States government confronts a devastating hack of federal agencies that officials have linked to Russia. I'll be happy if somebody does something about the cybersecurity of our government, because I'm not happy with what Trump's done for it. I was not happy with what Obama did for it. And, you know, quite frankly, even going back further, you can go back as far as Clinton. We should have had the top cybersecurity experts in the world defending our stuff, and we don't. We still don't. They think it's a joke because they're too stupid to understand it. And it pisses me off to no end. So, anyway, you know I like to end the show on a good note. And we're going to do that. We're going to keep doing that. As long as I can keep finding good news stories to tell you about, we're going to share them. In Jewish tradition, a mitzvah is a good deed that's performed with a good heart simply because it's the right thing to do. And that's just how Evelyn Topper described the kind act of a homeless stranger who'd gone out of his way to return her lost wallet. Topper likely dropped the wallet when she and her granddaughter, Michaela Gownard, were leaving a local shop in San Rafael, California, that they had just patronized. But Topper didn't realize that the wallet was missing until she got home. With her credit, debit, and medical cards gone, she was understandably upset. The next day, however, Topper got a call that put her worries to rest. Seems that a man named Sean Curry had found the wallet in a dumpster behind the coffee shop, except for the cash. Its contents were intact. Even though he'd been homeless for 5 years, rather than take advantage, Curry reached out to make arrangements to return Topper's property. While Topper lauded his behavior and declared it a mitzvah, Curry didn't believe he'd done anything out of the ordinary. He'd done it, he explained in an interview with NBC, because he had a heart, and that's the way he was brought up. While a true mitzvah is performed without expectation of recognition or reward, sometimes the powers that be, with the help of a determined young girl, take matters into their own hands. Michaela Gownard had already planned a socially distant drive-by party for her upcoming 12th birthday. Rather than presents, she decided to ask for contributions to be donated to charity in her name. Gownard hadn't yet chosen which charity the money would go to, but after learning more about the man who selflessly returned her grandmother's wallet, the choice became obvious. It was Gownard's turn to set her own mitzvah in motion. On the day of her party, the newly minted 12-year-old placed a photo of Curry and a collection basket next to balloons and party favors of an outdoor on an outdoor table in her driveway. By the end of her happy birthday processional, she had raised several hundred dollars. When Gownard and her mom met up with Curry the next day to give him the money, he admitted to feeling truly humbled by the heartwarming gesture. Rather than merely giving lip service to the idea that one good turn deserves another, like Curry, Gownard chose to make that good turn happen because she knew it was the right thing to do. Gownard said, "I think it's really important that people who think that because you got pushed down, you can never get back up again." Yeah, I don't think she finished that thought, but that's the quote, so I'm going to read it like it's written. But anyway, young lady, I think it's really important too, and I'm glad you did it. Next up, Keith Walker has been homeless since his teenage years, according to him. The one constant in this 53-year-old's life these days, his dog Bravo. Never certain of his own circumstances, to keep Bravo safe, Walker had arranged with Gracie Hamlin, founder of the W Underdogs, to let Bravo spend his nights in their facility. On December 18th, as Walker arrived to take Bravo for a walk, he found the shelter engulfed in flames. Without hesitation, Walker rushed into the inferno to save the animals. His quote, "I was nervous as hell. I'm not going to lie. I was really scared to go in there with all that smoke, but I feel that God put me here to save those animals. If you love a dog, you can love anyone in the world. My dog is my best friend, and I wouldn't be here without him, so I knew I had to try to save those other dogs." According to Hamlin, the firefighters at the scene had called animal control to take charge of rescuing the home's furry residents, but with the fire raging, Walker refused to wait and made his way into the building. Scared as he might have been, Walker pulled every one of the animals, 6 dogs and 10 cats, out to safety. Hamlin said, "He's my guardian angel, and I can't thank him enough for saving my animals. I'm still in disbelief. I've been around a fire, and I know how fast they can flare up." The fire started in the kitchen of the facility, ultimately rendered the facility uninhabitable. Fortunately, the animals were already slated to be moved into W Underdog's new Atlanta-based facility in a week's time and are all doing well. As word of Walker's bravery spread, a GoFundMe was launched to help make a little difference for a man who made a big difference. And the person that started the GoFundMe said that so far they have raised more than $37,000 to go to Walker. And while dealing with a person caught up in a cycle of long-term homelessness is complicated, the campaign's founder has vowed that all monies taken in will be put towards making a better future for the man who risked his own life to save the lives of helpless animals. My friends, that is the show. If you like it, tell your friends. If they like it, you need new ones. But they and you are welcome right here with me every Wednesday on KLRN Radio, America's podcast network, for the Conservative Curmudgeon Show. I'm the Grouch. Peace. Wanna get my body loose, wanna tell you what to do. I've been running out of bounds like an animal struggling, looking for a diamond. I'm trying, I'm fighting, riding in the rhythm now. I hate this place, nothing works here. The medications don't work. I've been here for 7 years. Here's to you, feel the grass, 'cause the last few nights.